I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
This is Spoke, the all-new and exclusive podcast series with me, Chidera, a.k.a. The Slum Flower.
And me, Sully Brakes, poet, writer, spoken word, artist, etc., etc.
Where we discuss issues at the heart of youth culture and how music and literature are shaping the conversation. For me, becoming isn't about arriving somewhere or achieving a certain aim. I see it instead as forward motion, a means of evolving, a way to reach continuously towards a better self. The journey doesn't end. Michelle Obama.
My journey is the journey of always, continually evolving, that there is never a point where you arrive at a thing, and if you do, that's kind of sad. Michelle Obama.
Our culture has conditioned us to grow up wanting to be something. Young people are constantly asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or, what are you going to do with your life? And the pressure to find your purpose can feel overwhelming.
With the constant temptation to compare yourself to others over social media, it can often feel like we're not doing enough to reach our true potential, or that we have not found out what we are really passionate about. And these feelings of inadequacy can leave us feeling isolated.
But what if we were to change the conversation? And if we were to understand that each of our purposes and paths are unique, and no two people's journeys will ever be the same?
In this episode, we talk about becoming, the struggles, the triumphs, and the never-ending journey of finding out who you are.
Jeez!
You know what you're saying, Chidi, man.
Do you know what? I'm really interested and fascinated by the concept of becoming. Because I think you never, ever finish meeting yourself. And
100.
That's something that makes life as exciting and as exhausting as it is.
Yeah.
Because the process of finding yourself, it is fun when you discover new sides of who you are, but then it's also really draining when you recognize that on the other side of those new sides of who you are a bunch of issues that you've got to sort through, because those issues definitely do affect the way we approach situations.
I think 100. I think that's what it goes back to what you're saying in the conversation, because we're kind of conditioned to believe that we're going to get to a complete version of ourselves, a version of ourselves we're going to be content with. But I think the reality is when you realise that, I wasn't not necessarily not content, but I've evolved past this person.
Yeah.
But this person I am now has different responsibilities, different requirements, different agendas. And it's kind of like overwhelming at times. You get what I'm saying? So I get what you mean. It's that kind of double-edged sword of like attainment and fulfillment, but at the same time, fear of the unknown, you know, and fear of growth and changing.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to have this conversation with two wonderful people.
Amazing people in the building today.
We're going to get into a really exciting discussion about
every
individual person in this room's journey to becoming their self.
Catalyst around
the
lady herself.
Yes,
around the main lady herself, Michelle Obama. You know, she's
the
inspiration for this conversation we're going to have. She's the catalyst for it. She's the muse.
The driving force.
Yeah.
The author of Becoming as well. But we're going to talk about this with Florence.
Hello.
We have Florence, who's going to introduce herself. But the rules are, there is no downplaying your achievements. There is no small talk about how great you are.
Yeah, you got to come with it. You got to come with it,
okay.
And be authentic. You know what I mean?
Okay.
This is your pitch. This is not an introduction. This is your pitch. So let everyone know who you are.
God, imagine if Michelle's listening to this right now.
Sure.
Exactly.
All right, I got it. Okay, so I'm an illustrator.
Jeez.
I'm an illustrator, designer, social issues activist. And I basically try to convey things that I'm learning about myself and the world around me through my artwork and my creativity. Mm-hmm. And also I think that the work I do, as I learned yesterday, actually, a panel discussion, is actually a form of self-care because it's a way of reminding myself that all this, I guess for me, I do feel a responsibility to be constantly equipping young women and femmes with the information that I am learning. Because I'd known this 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been, I just think the terminology that I know now is so important to who I am as a person because it validifies my experiences. And, it, you know, like the words such as victim blaming or sexual harassment. If I didn't know those words 5 years ago and I was blaming myself. Right. So I think, I guess I just want to equip young women with that kind of knowledge. And that's what I do in my work.
You do a wonderful job at that. I need to let everyone know, Florence is only 19 years old.
I turned 20 last week.
She's only 20.
So that means that when she was doing all the stuff she's been doing, she was only 19 when
19
she was doing it,
and
which
18
is mad.
As well.
And 18. You started doing this around 18 years old.
Yeah.
Insane. Do you know what I was doing at 18 years old?
No, babe.
I was beefing people on Twitter. That's what I was doing.
Yeah. You don't want to know what I was doing at 18. I don't think Twitter was about when I was 18. So I was beefing people in random places. Yeah. MSN was the thing.
We're also joined by someone who I'm really excited to introduce.
Amazing, brother.
His name is Dref. But can you please say what your full name is? Because you have a really beautiful set of names.
Come on, Nico. He's a goddamn brother. He's a goddamn brother. You know, I can give you the name. Let me know if I'm wrong, though, innit? Nico, Dref, Jani, yeah?
You're right on, Charlie.
Exactly, Charlie.
You want to explain what Nikwe means?
Okay, so Nikwe means, ni means king.
Jeez.
So, you're in the presence of royalty. Right?
Definitely. Bow.
And, Dref is a name I made up. Literally, I was sitting in bed around 1990 and I was trying to think of a name that no one would have. And I thought, Dref sounds strong and nobody's going to have that. And they didn't for a long time.
I've still not met anyone called Dref. So.
There's a couple. There's a couple in America.
Often imitated, but you know, never replicated. I hear that.
Dref, do you want to tell us what you do?
I'm a visual artist and also I'm a school teacher as well.
So. Too humble. Let's rewind that. Let's tell us what you do.
My name's Nikwe Dref Jani. And I'm not a boss. I'm a boss.
Boss. Give me the rosé.
Why are you a boss?
Because I work for myself.
Yes.
Jeez. And my peoples.
What does your work entail?
I'm basically a visual artist, most known for painting large-scale portraits in the street.
Yeah.
So last year I did a project called You Are Enough, was essentially painting 10 portraits of women from my own social circles. So these were everyday women whose stories resonated with me and who inspired me. So I painted different parts of London and that was, for me, it was a very successful project and a lot of people got to know my work through that.
I did. It's on my street. It's amazing.
There you go. Yeah.
And you made a piece to support the current campaign of Michelle Obama's
that's right.
As well. Can you explain that?
So what happened was is there's a couple of paintings of mine in Shoreditch and Amelia from Penguin. She was asked by her son to accompany her on the street art tour. And while she was on the street art tour, she saw the two paintings I had in Shoreditch and she knew that Penguin were going to be dealing with the forthcoming book. So she had me in mind and has been following my work since then. So when it was time to start thinking about marketing campaigns for the book, she approached me and essentially said that they wanted to work with me in some capacity. And I explained to her that, you know, I have a very clear methodology in which I work and I'm not really trying to paint adverts. And what was beautiful is that there was a discussion right from the beginning of us collaborating and essentially, you know, I sourced the wall, I presented the imagery that I wanted to paint and dealt with all of those different elements that I would do in my own work. And it was really nice to present, essentially we painted in Brixton, to present Brixton with this mural and was just really embraced by the whole community. It's a really beautiful thing to be able to leave a legacy for the community.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing just to be able to have like kind of a commission or whatever, or kind of the opportunity of that magnitude.
That's
we're
right.
talking about the first lady, then we're talking about the first black first lady. Do you get what I'm saying? So this is big stuff we're dealing with here. So if we're taking it back, we're talking about like historically and what she's achieved. I mean, I was watching her interview and she was talking about how she had all different kind of aspirations for herself when she was younger. So maybe I'll start with you, Florence. Like,
I'm sure
all of us had things we wanted to be when we was younger, but we've eventually evolved into different kind of like representations of that. You know what I mean? When I was young, I wanted to be a superhero. That's straight up. I used to make weapons, all those things. Maybe to some people, you know what I'm saying? Maybe to my mum, but
you guys... every superhero is still only going to be a superhero to some people. Like, do you think Superman can survive in Wakanda, bro?
It's true. When the vibranium comes out, it's a wrap. I get what you're saying. so if we're... Florence,
What did you want to be when you were younger? When you
grow
up?
I feel like I'm still younger. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
I feel like it's one of those things where...
Okay, so what do you want to be when you grow up?
Because
then?
I feel like it's a really tricky position, because I recently told people how old I was on my Instagram, because a lot of people were mistaking me for a 30-year-old woman because of the things I talk about.
Yeah.
And while I take that as a compliment...
You know in cartoons when it's like three children inside a coat?
Yeah, to get into the club.
That's what you were.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So, and this whole time people thought that I was like this 30-year-old woman because of the things I was talking about, and I understand that it's I do talk with a lot of confidence about the issues.
Yeah, it's mature content, for sure.
So while I took it as a compliment, it was also really annoying because I'd meet people in real life and they'd say, "Oh God, you look so young for your age," and I'd be like, I am 19. So when I already have a lot of imposter syndrome about my work. So then when people, because I'm so young and I'm going into even these spaces, I feel like I'm not supposed to be here. So in terms of my purpose and finding my purpose for what do I want to be when I grow up, I feel that a lot of people now, especially when you have a following and a lot of people look at you as a source of strength, there is this pressure to be an idol and that you do have a purpose. And I think that people put that purpose on you
100%
instead. And actually you kind of, you're not allowed to be yourself. And I think that it's really important to acknowledge that I am allowed to do things that don't serve to empower you. Just
and you're allowed
you
to be
that
wrong
way.
As well.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because that's
the
only way you actually learn.
Exactly. Anything that I have, I would not be the strong and fearless woman I am today if it was not for going through and growing through things where I either made mistakes or horrible things happened to me. But that's gone so far away from the question.
No. You answered it perfectly.
Sure. So in terms of what I want to be when I grow up, I think that there is an underlying theme of I want to equip young women with the knowledge that I'm learning about and that I've learned from such a young age. But I guess I'm just doing it. I'm doing it as I go along, you know? And I think as long as I'm doing this, and I think as long as you decide your purpose and what makes you happy, that is important. And then that has a knock-on effect on other people. When you know yourself, other people pick that up and they want a bit of it and then they become themselves. And yeah, for sure. But I think it's with a woman, it's definitely an age thing as well. Because I remember when I did tell people my age, a lot of women who were like 25 years old were like, "Oh my God, what am I doing with my life?" Because I'm 25. I mean, that's so young. But with women, you know, we are told that our worth as human beings is intrinsically linked to our beauty. Quote unquote beauty.
Quote.
Yeah. So and I think that it's definitely different for women or people who identify as women because of that the whole age thing, and that we are supposed to be desirable, and then once we're no longer desirable, we're not worth anything. So I feel like there's a lot of a time limit on a societal time limit.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist, but this is the world that we live in. And I think, it's definitely different for women in terms of finding your purpose.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of going with what fires me up inside and letting that guide me, because, I just have what gets me angry. What do I want to talk about? What am I learning about myself? What am I checking myself with? And what can I hold other people accountable for?
I think that's even important, because I think that's what Michelle tried to touch on more so in her message, the fact that, like, we're talking about completion and, you know, trying to ascertain to a certain version of ourselves when, like you said, it's all about being enthused about your growth and learning through and evolving through that. Yeah. And I think that is actually interesting. I think that's what the whole theme of this whole conversation is about.
Yeah.
So if I took it to you, Nique, so if we're talking in a similar vein, you know, me and you we're a bit more mature, you know, we're not 19. So how was your whole like childhood shaped, and where did you think it was going before we kind of came to this realization that no, it's never really going anywhere until we decide where we're going next?
Okay, so I was brought up in Windsor. And I definitely felt like I didn't fit in there.
Near the castle?
Yeah.
I was going to say that as well. Yeah, like, let me not.
You've been there though, innit? I mean, that's just... Yeah.
No, I've been to Clarence House.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Bear hotting me up, bruv.
Yeah, so I was brought up in Windsor. I didn't feel like I fit in there. So I used graffiti as a vehicle for me to explore. And I spent a lot of my young days in London.
Was that legal at the time?
Illegally. Oh, okay. As a traditional graffiti artist. Yeah. Tagging, painting trains, track sides, all of that. And after getting arrested a couple of times.
As you do.
And with African parents, you know what I mean? I thought it was better for my backside to find another path. So I went and went to university, did my degree.
Sorry to stop you there. How was that conversation? You telling like your Ghanaian parents that I'm arrested because I was scribbling on the side of the train?
Oh, it didn't really work like that. It was more like I got caught paying on the train, and then they took me home to search the house.
Okay.
It was like that.
Okay.
Why did you search the house?
Because what they do is they come and look for more evidence. Yeah, because that's how it works.
Like, did they find loads of like spray cans?
Yeah, all of that, magazines, books, the whole lot. So yeah, it's not cool.
Yeah, it's not cool. Twice. My mum.
And you know the journey from London to Windsor is a long journey. So I was just anticipating what was going to go down. So yeah, and I after university, I spent quite a long time trying to work out what I wanted to do and how I was going to do it, and that's why this whole the theme of today's show is really interesting to me, because I was very anxious that I wanted to know what I was and what I was doing. And now I've realized that that's not a destination. It is literally a journey that you go through your whole life. And the thing that's been most important to me is not to stop. And even though you're moving forward in a way that you necessarily might not think is going to contribute to the end goal of finding yourself, just moving forward is enough, because where I am now is a culmination of just the steps that I took to get to this point. And the falling down is just as important as the running. See what I'm saying? So yeah, definitely I'd say to anybody who is feeling that way is just to not stop. It's important thing is not to stop. And if you stop as well, it's not a bad thing. Stop, reflection is also important in this journey. So
dope. When was the last time you stopped?
I haven't stopped for a couple of years because I've been quite busy.
High in demand. It's been in demand.
I'd say probably 2 years ago, like just before I got to this place. And also like when I was teaching, because I spent quite a bit of time teaching. So during that time of teaching, and I'm feeling like, I'm not doing what I really want to do. I want to be out in them streets painting.
What do you teach?
I'm an art teacher.
Oh my God, you're an art teacher. You'd be the coolest art teacher.
No, it doesn't work like that. I'm coolest art teacher for like a day.
But tell them that story you told me. We were talking before we got in here about Instagram, the guy Instagram after he left.
It was just a bit mad because like, you know, I don't go into the classroom and start saying, hey guys, I'm your new art teacher. I'm Jeff. It just doesn't work like that. You know what I mean?
How's it work?
I'm just doing my thing. Mr. Journey. So I'm there doing my bits and it was quite a tough school. And when the kids get to that point, I just say to them, listen, I've got my GCSEs. Like, you're not doing this for me. And kids don't get that. They think that when you give them work to do, you're doing it. They think you're, you know, asking them to do it for you.
Yeah. It's
like, nah, I've got my GCSEs. This is for you. Like, I will do my best to teach you. But, you know, you've got to give me the mandate to teach you. Yeah. So I'm trying to get them to understand. And obviously, like, 11, 12, 13-year-old kids, they're not going to get that.
Yeah.
So anyway, towards the last week, somebody found my Instagram and it was going around. I was cool with that because I was just about to leave. So I was like, you know, do your thing. But then a couple of months later, one of the kids, like, messaged me and he's like, oh, Jeff. And I was so sir, you know, really sorry. Like, I realised I should have listened to you, you know, because he's seen...
After he's left school now?
No, after I'd left, because he started seeing, you know, however many followers and they think that's all important. Actually, sir's cool. You know what I mean? And I've got to be honest, I aired him. He had to get aired. Because I was like, I told you, you should have listened.
You can get it.
You had your chance.
Look at that. Right. So let's get into the items that you both came with. Florence, do you want to start with your item?
Okay, so I brought in a quote that I thought we would obviously, I think part of finding your purpose is that with social media comes a lot of pressure and comparison constantly to other people, where they are in their lives. And there was this tweet the other day written by Wesley Snipes. I think it was like... I don't think it's his original quote. I think he kind of added something on the end to it.
Okay.
But basically, it said, do not let the internet rush you. No one is posting their failures. And I have made quite a few illustrations on social media before. Basically, it really sat with me. Just that first sentence, do not let the internet rush you. Mm. Because I think so many times, like I said, when I told people that I was 19 years old, they felt this kind of... rush. Oh my God, this Floss is 19 years old and she's done all this stuff. And actually, I mean, I've had the most wild year, like, and I don't think that it's, I wouldn't even tell people to do what I've done because it's just been so unhealthy. Like, I've not slept to get jobs done. I'm Tadara, I'm sure you've had like the most knackering year.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to tell you about my failures.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where actually people, you know, people don't know what's going on behind it. No one posts their failures. No one posts the days where I was in bed, like absolutely anxious about something when I was holding this campaign over summer. And I was on the news, and this was the first time I was being on the news, and I was like so anxious after. I had to take some time for myself. And I just think it's so important to remember that, yeah, no one is posting their failures online. Instagram is a highlight reel. It is everybody's best bits. And just to be cognizant of that all the time and to have that filter on that you're never going to see people's struggles or their failures, even not just with how they look. And I think it's funny now, as I talk to more women who are self-employed creatives like ourselves, we're no longer comparing our bodies with each other. It's what jobs we're booking.
Yeah.
And that's really funny because so it's not a good thing, but it's a better thing because we're becoming more aware of, we understand
of achievement,
beauty standards. Yeah. We get that now. It's just a standard. It's not. Yeah. And now it's like, okay, what's she doing with her career?
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that's the thing. It's that we get caught up now. And I'm just speaking for the women that I've spoken to in London who are self-employed. We're looking at other, she's busy this week. You know, I've not been booked, blah, blah, blah. We're not comparing each other's bodies anymore. We're looking beyond that. I thought about it the other day because I thought, of course, it is a step forward because we're no longer looking
It's weird, isn't it?
It's so weird.
It's really weird.
And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. But yeah, that quote, do not let the internet rush you. No one's posting their failures. It's so important because so many people said to me that, that really helped me because I compare myself to you. But I compare myself to everybody.
Yeah.
We all do it. No matter where you are in life, you always have that thought. Yeah.
It's true. I'm sure Michelle Obama compares herself to people,
God.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wonder who she compares herself to. But I think who wouldn't? But I think that quote of do not let the internet rush you, no one's posting their failures, is really important. So for me, I'm sure people will look at me and think, oh my God, this girl, she's so sick. Like, which I agree with. This girl,
Queen
she's so
Peckham.
Sick. Queen of Peckham. Queen of Peckham. Every week there's something going on. If you see what the cop, if you, like, I'm going to obviously like talk about my failures. I think it's really important to be able to discuss that side of things as well and own that. So for me, my failures have been that I am, what's the word? I've only recently gotten an accountant. And I've been doing this since 2014.
Yeah.
Which means that I've only recently realized you're supposed to like be saving your money. Do you know what I used to do as a failure as well, right? So Supreme, Supreme has an app. For those that know, Supreme is it's like a cult clothing line.
There's always a queue outside the shop.
There'll always be a queue. You need tickets to even get a spot in the queue. You're better off sleeping the night before. But you can download the app, and the app will send you a notification every Thursday morning that there's a new collection that's dropped. But these clothes are very expensive. It's streetwear, so it's t-shirts, hoodies, jumpers, and random kitsch items. Like, you know, you can get a Supreme toothbrush for like £15-20. People resell it for like £50 to £70. But the point I'm trying to make is that I used to, and still do sometimes, spend a lot of money on Supreme. And the thing is, when I'm doing it, it's, the reason why it's a failure is because when I'm doing it, I'm using buying something as a way to like feel like I'm rewarding myself. But in a way, if you're using spending money on something to reward yourself, you're kind of also financially punishing yourself too.
For sure.
Because that's now money that you could have put to better use. Like, you could have put that towards your rent or covering your bills for the next 2 months. So that's something that I'm still in the process of learning to do in terms of being financially
responsible.
Nikwe, what item did you bring with you?
I basically came across this quote from Aisha Akanbi.
Love her.
And, yeah, she's a real G.
She's a real G.
Yeah, it's only a few lines, but it kind of hit me.
Go on.
In terms of what I'm dealing with at the moment. So she basically said, higher education makes you knowledgeable, but an acceptance and interrogation of your darkness makes you wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's deep.
Yeah, and I just, in terms of like, yeah, like I said, you know, I'm really on that at the moment, like really shining a light on my own darkness and my own past and my own history and my own traumas and my own whatevers, because we all have them.
Yeah.
You know, and understanding how those things impact the decisions that we make now and impact other people. Mm. And probably the most important is how that impacts on my son.
Mm. You know, have a son?
Yeah, I have a son.
How
old
is your son?
So he's 11. Yeah, he's 11.
Oh.
And he's getting to that point where he's... I've always had a relationship with him where he can be open to express himself and what he's thinking and feeling and my own shortcomings. I've always been open. I've always encouraged him to be open with me about
that. So is that you telling him where you feel like you're falling short as well?
Yeah.
Or him saying to you, I don't think you're doing this, that?
Yeah, on a basic level, you know, if you know, my son has always seen my work. You know, I will take him when I'm painting and he's cool to hang and chat to people and whatnot. And I'll say to him, you know, does the eye look right? And he'll go, nah, it doesn't look right, Dad. You need to change this. And he will actually see me change those things. It's not a big deal to be able to critique his dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
and
dope.
I've tried to, like, obviously that's my comfort zone, but I've also tried to, like, do that in other aspects of my life. So, yeah, I'm just really aware that, like, our darkness is almost like a car, and there's a steering wheel, and our darkness is holding onto the steering wheel and steering us into what direction we're going in our life. And if we're not aware, then sometimes we can get ourselves down certain cul-de-sacs. And also we can get...
cliff.
Yeah. So we can get our family and those that are dear to us also down a cliff. I'm very aware of that. So,
do you know what's really important?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
That stuck with me about what you were saying in regards to your relationship with your son was that, and this is something that isn't practiced heavily in like Eastern cultures, is the fact that you create room for your son to critique you, but not just that, you actually make changes based on what he said. And that's really important for a child to be able to do that. What you don't realize you're doing is that you are allowing him to believe that he's a valuable person that actually has a say in the world.
Mm.
And what tends to happen with a lot of parents is that they create this dynamic between them and their child where they're the dictator and their child is always going to be below them because they are a child. So it means that you grow up, even as an adult, feeling quite intellectually inferior, but also it makes you really question your own emotions and you tend to feel like, you know, what you have to say isn't really as valuable. So you end up becoming either a passive aggressive person or you rarely ever express yourself. So what you don't realize you're doing, maybe you do realize it, I don't know, is that you're cultivating a really healthy environment for a young man. And I think that's so, so, so key. And I really do believe that that's going to influence the way that he approaches the question of what do you want to be when you grow up? Because it means that he'll be a lot more confident in knowing that he can be a lot more things than he probably would have said he wanted to be if he was nurtured in an environment where you know, if he said to you, Dad, I think that eye is kind of like not balanced, and you said to him, come on, what do you know?
Stupid boy,
sit down.
Yeah, like that's not okay. So I really want to thank you for doing that, even though it's your child, but still, like,
it's important.
It's so, important,
especially for the next
that.
Generation. Because I think I was maybe like in like early 20s, the first time I told my parents something and they took my advice, and that just blew my mind. I was like, whoa, like,
I'm actually
like
a person.
Yeah, do you understand? And then it got to a point where obviously like, I've started doing well in my career and stuff like that, but it got to a point where now my mum would be asking me, be like, oh, what should I do with this? Or my dad would call me and say, boy, like, and my dad's a very like, he's a very like proud man, but he's even always been cool. Yeah. But he'll hit me up and be like, so boy, look, at the moment I'm managing this at the moment, how do you think I should handle it? And I have to take a second back and be like, oh, he's asking, you know, this
the
is
dynamics
my
dynamics have changed.
Yeah, do you understand? So I think it's important because, like you said, it empowers them, and on top of that, it empowers them that their story has value. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'm sure, like, Floss, you can agree that the importance of having to tell your story. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like,
yeah, for sure. It tells children that their voice matters, and I think that's something that we do have to retrain ourselves. Is that, you know, so many people ask me all the time, how do you go into a room and speak confidently? And I think you have to tell yourself, my voice is important, and it's just telling yourself, my voice is important. I deserve to be here.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke on briefly on imposter syndrome and not feeling like you belong in spaces, just because of like a, you know, I'm so young and I feel like, what am I doing here? You know, this isn't right. I've got everything's just been luck, or, you know, this has just happened. I've not really done anything. And that's the voice inside your head that will always tell you that. But I think what is really important, what you're doing, is just, yeah, like Chidera said, creating space for this person, this your son, to feel like they have a voice and that their voice is valid and that they can be heard. Yeah.
But you know what, Florence? I also have that same imposter syndrome where I feel like I'm too young to be, but what happened, it's weird because one half of the encouragement is, wow, you're so young and you're so intelligent and I'm glad you know all these things.
Yes.
Come and speak here, come and do this. But then the other half is people, or like the imaginary people, but also somehow people that you've come across or people you've read things saying stuff like, yeah, but like, you're like literally like 19, you're literally 23.
Yeah,
you're literally 20.
Yeah.
You're literally 23. Like, how can you be speaking with so much authority on something that people who are like in their 40s speak on? And for me, that is something I deal with daily, where I often feel like, oh, it's a bit of a bittersweet situation I'm in because I do know that I know a lot for a 23-year-old.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that I'm still in the process of learning a lot too.
Exactly.
But then people tend to project, you know, this idea that, wow, you know a lot of things, come and talk. And whilst I do agree that I know a lot of things and I can talk, what does make me feel a little bit nervous is when I see women that occupy similar spaces to me, that are a couple or even a few more years older than me. And they, because I see people saying a few things about me indirectly where they're like, oh, like all these like young, like 23, under 25s who like suddenly discover feminism and are talking and all this nonsense, right?
Yeah.
I hear a lot of condescending
like they
tones.
Paved the way for us.
Right.
And I get that all the time. It's, yes, some people, it's very patronising.
Right.
And it can be very kind of, kind of condescending. And which I don't understand, because literally all we're trying to do is uplift people,
like,
right?
This is the result you wanted. There are now people, you've got new members. Why are you now mad?
So on the topic, I want to segue from this topic of trolls and people kind of like online trying to antagonize you, because Michelle talks about it as well. She talks about having to deal with that, and you can imagine being the first lady, the level at which she had to deal with it.
And I mean, being black.
Yeah, exactly. She's talking about there was like a bullet hole in one of the walls, like, because someone tried to shoot into the white. So we're talking about deeper than trolls, isn't it? But I'm wondering, Nikwe, like, in the same way, have you like, What's been your experience for having to deal with that kind of backlash? Or what you do, I kind of feel like, where can you find any fault with it? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because obviously you guys have articulated very like, not necessarily coherent, but understandable arguments as to why people are against you and your message and why there may be conflict. So with you, is there like a similar dynamic? Is there anything that you've had to kind of like overcome because of your message, what it's about, who you are, where you're from, you know?
Last year, I was filmed by Channel 4, and based on the You Are Enough series. And bearing in mind that the people that I painted are family members and people from my social circles.
Yeah.
So these people I know and love. And the Channel 4 feature came out Sunday, prime time.
prime time.
And I got a call like a couple of minutes into the it being aired. In fact, no, I didn't get caught. I got many calls. People saying, don't go online.
Why?
Don't go online. Like, it was mad.
Seriously?
It was such a polarized response to the feature. It was either absolute, like, big up, so much love for what I was doing, or absolute hate.
Wait, why were people...
Because essentially I was painting large-scale portraits of black women in the streets of London. And people were going nuts for it. They were absolutely going nuts. And it really made me realise that...
Wait, so I'm trying to understand what's wrong here. What were the negative things being said?
Essentially racism. How dare I paint black women so big in London?
Wow.
They couldn't get their head around it. And they couldn't get their head around that it was a self-initiated project. They were like, how can the council allow this? And blah, blah, blah. Honestly, I'm not even going to go into it because I don't want to give it that much light. Yeah. But what it showed me is that when you make meaningful work, because what I was listening to when you guys were talking, when you make meaningful work, there's going to be people that love and there's going to be people that hate. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of it.
Like, where do you think that hate comes from, and what's the reasoning behind it? Do you know?
I looked at it as a loss of control.
Oh, why
like,
control?
It's that, like, for me to get my cans, get my ladder, get my inspiration, to find a wall, to paint so big, to represent a section of our community that are unrepresented so unapologetically and without permission. People feared that. The people that were commenting negatively were in fear of what that represented and what that message that was being sent out. And, you know, doing it, you know, by that time I'd spent like 6 months doing this project.
Yeah.
But it was then for it to be on the platform. That's why, you know, the fact that it was on prime time was significant.
Yeah.
Because it was like going to the homes of so many people, and mm-hmm. then
all
then
over the UK,
and then it went online, and then I was getting calls from, you know, I ended up going Washington Post, like BBC, Jeez. ITV, it was all over. And like I said, I'm very aware of the context in which the work was being made in as well. You know, it was around the time of the Women's March. It was around the time of Trump. It was also around the time of the conversation on unequal pay. So, yeah, I was very aware that this work was gathering momentum because of the context as well. And, yeah, people were upset. And also it was this thing as well, is, you know, it's like, let's be real, like a man painting women in this way, there's a lot of fragile egos out there. And I was aware that that was an assault on those minds as well.
But then I feel like on the other side of the conversation, it's so important, like seeing a black man celebrating black women,
yeah.
seeing a black man using his tools and his platform and his passion yeah. to introduce and start an important conversation about adoring blackness. Like, there are so many ways this can be looked at wonderfully.
It's a fine line, isn't it? We should be open to critique, because that also feeds into the understanding that every move we make, we're not perfect, and we're working towards that. But at the same time, we can't just be this like sort of dumping place for everybody else's issues.
Yeah, 100%.
You're an artist or an activist.
Yeah. You just let other people's insecurities dictate their own happiness.
Yeah. They're not talking to you. They're talking about themselves.
Their projections.
Like, yeah.
So a question for both of you is, like, how do you actually effectively be an artist without losing yourself or without damaging relationships with people? And how are you effectively an activist without losing yourself and severing or damaging relationships with other people?
I think that it's I'm going to talk about my parents, because I think that's the biggest thing.
And listen. So,
you know, having white parents and then talking to parents about things that I'm learning about myself, even the concept of white privilege is...
What's your parents' background, if you don't, just to give it context?
So my mum grew up in Plymouth, which is where I'm from.
Oh, okay.
And my dad grew up in Liverpool.
Oh, okay. Then.
It's one of those things where white privilege, even talking, having that conversation with my parents and being like, okay, so just to let you know that, you know, everything you've worked for hasn't been untouched by this thing, that this privilege, this, and even explaining that to parents or even my white friends from home, it's something so new. And that I find myself getting angry at them. And I'm like, no, because that was you a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever. And then you got it. It's like drip feeding these concepts to people, which is what you were saying. And then just kind of, so I always make sure to call my mum up about these things. So I'll be like, hey, so I explain my posts to her and I explain what's going on in the world sometimes. And I kind of drip feed things to my parents, I think. And I think that is how I keep myself sane in talking about this and also being... extending the same kindness to others that was extended to me when I was
humility,
learning.
Basically.
Yeah,
humility.
Exactly. Yeah.
I really love that.
Yeah.
What about you, Nikwe?
Say again.
So, how do you manage to maintain being an artist without feeling the pressure to make people understand you or make people see the world how you see it?
Okay, that's something I struggle with to this day. Yeah, so that's
at least you're honest. Yeah,
I struggle with it because I am that person, you know, anybody that's close to me will tell you that I'm like, I don't get it. How can you not see this? You know, some basic stuff. And I'm like, but you know, we have to remain humble in its truest sense. We have to strive to remain humble and understand that there's somebody looking at us and saying, why doesn't he get it?
Yeah, 100%.
You know, the minute we think we are the authority and nobody else gets it but us, we're finished.
Yeah.
Mm. This is a key word, authority, you know. And I'm learning that as an activist and artist, you're not an authority to voice on anything just because you know.
You're not even an authority to yourself.
No.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Drag me to hell.
So there's that. And you know that thing when somebody sees you and they say, oh, you look like just like how you were at school. That's cool. That's a big up. Yeah. But when somebody says you're just like how you, like I knew you 10 years ago, that's problematic.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't want no one to tell me I'm just like I was 2 years ago.
You've changed. Yeah, I want to hear you've changed. Yeah.
So if you imagine, right, like you are striving to change. Yeah? As a creative person, you should be doing that. You should be striving to grow, to evolve and to change. Yeah. Mm. And then you have people who say they want to do that, because that's usually you try to have people around you who have the same mindset. Yeah. So people who say they want to do that, but then you're looking to the left and right and they're actually just saying something different.
Yeah.
Then what's going to happen is at some point, you're not going to be in the same lane.
Yeah.
And you're gonna leave people behind.
Yeah.
And then they're looking at you like, oh, I see.
I knew it was going to happen.
Man's goal stushing. A little bit of TV
got,
and now
got
he thinks...
Got the Obama plug now, you know.
My parents do that to me. That's something I find really hard to talk about. Like, the fact that, like, ever since I've been on this journey, like, it's like, I don't know if anybody who's listening relates to this, but it's like the better my career gets, the worse my relationship with my parents becomes. Because, again, it's like you were mentioning earlier about control. And when you have success and access to, you know, being on TV and being able to make your own money, it means that people now have less of an ability to tell you who you are.
Yeah.
And that's something that is quite threatening.
Yeah.
When you're around people who don't really understand why you've grown and why you're being celebrated, you now have to sort of shrink yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So it's constantly...
Yeah, because they see you in one context, that doesn't, they're accustomed to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It only works
for a period of time. And then what you realise is that those people, like you said, are projecting their stuff on you. Mm. And that's why originally when we were talking, I talked about this is where I'm at right now. Like, you know, you might speak to Jeff in a year's time and say something different. But I'm realising that we build structures. And when I say that in its loosest term, in terms of like, maybe we build organizations or a little crew or a little movement, we build them based on our childhood traumas and our inability to shine a light on our childhood traumas. That's why that quote was so like impactful for me, because you know, you might look at this like movement or this group of people who are moving, and you know, there's a person who's the driving force of that particular thing. And when you actually look at their motivation, they're messed up.
Artists in generally tend to be.
And even look at it in a wider context. You know, look at music, and you look at someone like 15 years ago and the kind of music they were making, or you know, if it was art, whatever it is, and then everybody's thinking that whatever that person's saying is the gospel. And then 15 years, 20 years down the line, and they're a different person and they've grown and evolved. And like, some of us are still trying to hold on to what that person said 15 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's like we have to, I really wish that we grow as a society into understanding that wherever anybody is at that particular time, it's for that particular time.
Yeah.
And we have to factor in. So like that, so that when you make your miss, you know, when you do put some things online, you don't feel like that post is, you know, oh my God, it's going to be online forever.
Yeah.
No, you're allowed. You must be allowed.
With the internet now, it's so hard because everything is documented. And I don't think we are allowed to. Well, we should be allowed to grow, but we're not really. People always drag things up from a few years ago. And I think that the internet can sometimes prevent people it can sometimes stagnate your growth because you're not allowed to be, because you said something 5 years ago, especially with that kind of thing. And I think it can, you know, where's the years of being in our 20s or whatever, pre-internet, where, you know, you could just evolve and be that person and you meet people as they are and you accept that person. And if they want to tell you about their past, they can. But now, because everything is documented, like the music videos 15 years ago, as you were saying, we hold that person for who they were 15 years ago, which is ridiculous because everything's documented.
We don't allow people to fall over and make mistakes and, you know, learn from them. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Right. So before we wrap, I want to ask everyone, because this is what we do here on This Is Spoke podcast, because everything is always going to be about us being on the same level and learning from each other. So I want to ask everyone in this room, what have you learned today? Okay. While you're thinking, I'll start with my answer.
Okay, cool.
So, I learned from Nikwe, and this is such a very specific thing, but it still really stuck with me, about putting your child in the position where they get to critique you. It's so important. I keep on emphasizing on it because it's so important to allow children to believe that they can create change in the world and even change their parents. It's so key because that really does influence the way you approach your own life. So that's really sticking with me because I want to be able to speak to myself in that way and nurture my inner child in that way where I can actually take my own advice. That's literally what it means. I need to just learn to take my own advice and believe that I can lead myself. So that way of seeing how you have that relationship with your child has inspired me to have a more collaborative relationship with my inner child.
I think Floss, you actually educated me on quite a good approach. So I'm a bit like Nikwe. If I try to tell you something and you don't get it, I'm like, you know what? It's your life. Do your thing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
But I think such a
passive aggressive. I know. It must be a Ghanaian thing, isn't it? But I just feel like when you mentioned the whole drip feed kind of approach, I thought, you know what? Maybe I should invest some time into seeing how that works out. Gradually giving people time to become familiar and understand the concept rather than just being like, all right, cool, then do your thing. You know,
it's not your responsibility then. You're not having to like pander to this person and make sure that they get there. You're not taking on all of this emotional labor. You're just like leaving them with a little bit. Come back a few days later. Maybe that's kind of mulled over, and then that's what I do with my
parents. That's the principle. There's like a book. There's a book like How to Win Friends and Influence People. I feel like that should be a chapter in the book, like somewhere. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. Because it can be very frustrating.
That was my lesson.
Did you learn anything today, Florence?
Yeah, I was going to say about what Nikwe said as well, about how you're raising your son. And I thought that was so important because I don't think I've even heard that parenting narrative before. And I think that really shook me. I was like, wow, you know, you actually allow your son to, not that it's like wild, but I just find it really inspiring that you are giving younger people the chance to critique you, because I feel like when we don't do that with children, we often put the responsibility of our intellect and our worth as human beings into institutions like schools. So with your quote with about higher education and how that not makes you knowledgeable, but then, you know, when you grow from your darkness and you unpack that darkness, that's where the real knowledge comes from. And I think that quote really stuck with me because I resonate with that on every single level. And then how you spoke about you're being entirely transparent with your child and your son and about him just being open to critique you and the world around him, it's just so important. And that's really stuck with me today, especially the quote.
For me, as a you know, large part of, you know, my day to day is really thinking about my art, and as a self-employed artist, I think sometimes it can be a very lonely road. And being an artist is not just about making the art or the kind of work that I'm trying to make. It's also about making sense of the world that's around me. And it's not like going into an office where you can talk to the person to the left and talk to the right. You know, it's not really like that. It's not always that I get the opportunity to, the things that I'm seeing and I'm feeling and thinking, this is what it is to put it alongside others and see how it sits with them. And I think being in this environment and seeing that, okay, some of the things that I've been feeling and thinking are being shared by all of us. We're all feeling and thinking that same thing. Yeah. It's kind of a lovely experience to know that, okay, I'm not going a bit mad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
been shared by others.
Well, thank you so much, Nikwe and Florence, for sharing yourselves
Thanks
with
us,
sharing your story and having a wonderful discussion about who you wanted to be, who you've become, and who you are on your way to hashtag becoming.
She did that.
Put it in there.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.